When I was a kid, the place where the US president lived was the White House, da, da, two syllables. But now, of course, it is the White House.
The ABC's word wizard. The Lord of Language. Professor Rolly Sussex with A Word in Your Ear.
Good evening, Rolly Sussex.
Good evening, Beck.
Mardi Gras, that's a word we've heard a lot recently. Are we pronouncing it correctly, Rolly?
I'm not sure there is a correct single pronunciation anymore. In French, it is Mardi Gras, da, 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 two syllables. Mardi is Tuesday, and gras means fat. So this is Fat Tuesday, and it's the last day when you're allowed to eat indulgent things like fatty foods before Lent, whereupon you're meant to give up things. It's also called Shrove Tuesday in English, by the way, which means when you've been to confession and been shriven, or Pancake Tuesday, which is more like Mardi Gras. Now, the important thing about Mardi Gras is that nowadays people are pronouncing it with a stress on the first syllable as if it was just one word, Mardi Gras. And listening to broadcasts from the Sydney Mardi Gras, I don't think I heard Mardi Gras, da-da-da, at all. So this has now been borrowed and we've sort of anglified it. And by giving it just one stress, it's a bit like the place where the US president lived was the White House. But now, of course, it is the White House.
Yes.
Following the American pattern, one stress means that that group of words is taken as a single compound word. And so Mardi Gras, I think, has now been finally and linguistically accepted into English. It's got one stress, and that's the way we're going to say it from now on.
Well, I'm going to call it Fat Tuesday every now and again, just to throw it in for fun. Rolly's keen to talk about punctuation tonight, so we'll get to exclamation marks and the new and ominous meaning for full stops. But, Rolly, there are another couple of words that you've heard, one of them from the Prime Minister.
Yes. I should say that I'm always hoovering up data as I go around my daily things. And this one came from the Prime Minister himself after the Dunkley by-election. And he was talking about where the Liberal Party have gotten to in 2024. Gotten. Now, that marks him. I think he's in his early 50s, isn't he? That marks him as a generation which has been overtaken by gotten, because I belong to the generation where gotten was dreadful and uneducated and you weren't allowed to use it and never, ever write it in an essay. So this is interesting when our most visible public figure is using gotten.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Americans have it as a standard form of the past participle of got. You know, I have gotten rich in the past few years. Wish I had. This is now... Well, sorry, start again. It was common in Shakespeare's time. He used both got and gotten. It crossed the Atlantic in 1620 with the Mayflower. It took root in America, although Strunk and White, who are American writers, did a book about style in 1911, I think, and they said that gotten was an abomination that should never be used.
Ooh.
That was by the Americans, for the Americans, and they were, in history's day, wrong.
Right. Well, Anthony Albanese is 61 years
61.
Old. Yeah, and I'm not afraid to say, Rolly, rightly or wrongly, I use gotten.
Oh, yeah, but you are even more securely in the gotten generation. It's too late for me. I'm afraid the horse has bolted and gotten will never get me, I hope anyway.
You have heard me say another word tonight that pricked your ears up, though.
It did indeed, and this was what happens when you're on a ship and it's going up and down and you're feeling sick. Now, it comes from a Latin word, naus, naus, which means a ship, and the word is nauseous, nauseous, nauseous. All these pronunciations are heard from time to time, and we don't really know what the most natural one is at the moment. The dictionary tells me that the symptom itself, nausea, is that that's the most favoured pronunciation, followed by nausea. Nausea, nausea. Mm. But with nauseous, 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 nauseous.
Nauseous, yeah.
It really is a dog's dinner and everybody's having a crack at it. I would simply use the one that feels natural to you and hope that nobody objects.
Well, I realise that there is hypocrisy in my pronunciation because I think I say nauseous, but if I was saying the word nauseating...
Ah.
That would suggest that I have different logic for each.
It would too, because in nauseating, you're going back to the pronunciation of this on the single word. Would you say nausea, nausea, or nausea?
Nausea.
I've got a dreadful bout of nausea.
Nausea, I think. Yeah. Yes.
Interesting. These things show us that particularly with a word like nauseating, which isn't very common, you don't hear it pronounced too much. You go back to what you think you know about the simpler form, which is nausea, 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 and take a punt and sort of hold tight and cross your fingers. There's a lot of this in English at the moment because partly from American influences, nauseous is certainly American. But it's now, I would have thought, probably 70%+ of the time I hear it.
Yes. All right, I might deploy some other phrases. Crook in the guts, we'll go with that, and then everyone knows what I'm talking about. Grant has called in from St. Lucia with a question for you, Rolly Sussex. Hello, yep. Grant.
Good evening, Rebecca, and good evening, Professor Sussex.
I'm Rolly to everybody, please.
Rolly,
yeah, thank you, Rolly. My question is about quantifying and what the correct term is. So if you have less humanity, that would be correct. But if you yes. can quantify it, then it should be fewer people. Yep. But what we're hearing, what I'm hearing regularly now, and it just grates me because I think I was taught differently, was that you have less people around and you have less carbs in food rather than fewer people and fewer carbs and fewer cars on the road. But you seem to hear less all the time. And I wanted to find out what was grammatically correct and whether this is English that's in transition into something that I was taught was wrong just because it's easier to do, or what's happening.
Your observation is dead right. The strict grammatical form is as you put it. If you can count something like people or cars or whatever, then it should be fewer. And if you can't count it, but it's a mass noun like beer or air or water or maize or something, then that should be less. But if you go to your local supermarket, it will certainly say 12 items or less. Right? Now, this is a particular express lane, and it should be fewer. And I wrote to them and said, if you don't change this, I'm going to take my custom elsewhere. And they ignored me and did nothing at all. So I'm afraid I've lost, but you're dead right. And certainly when writing, if you're writing for a journal, a newspaper, if the sub-editors are on the job, they will pick you up for this and try and make sure that you get it the right way around. So more for things that you can't count, fewer for things that you can.
Great observation, Grant.
Dead right.
Thank you so much. Keep your questions coming through. You can text Rolly as well, 0467 922 612. And when you text, of course, Rolly, I'll be able to watch out for punctuation. Want to give us a little history lesson on that?
Okay. Well, this is really prompted by the enormous explosion of texting. And the odd fact that I think when I left school in the 50s, which dates me, there were quite a few of my classmates who probably wouldn't do very much writing except for Christmas cards and shopping lists and things. They were doing different sorts of jobs. If you get on any bus at 4 o'clock now, you'll find all of the school kids with their phones, and we have a generation which is absolutely besotted with writing. And an Indian gentleman recently scored the world record for number of texts per month. He managed to achieve 500,000. How he brushed his teeth, I'm not quite sure, but never mind. But we have become a culture which is definitely addicted to writing in this very, very interesting way. Twitter, remember, was originally 140 characters limit in 2006. It then went up to 280, and it's recently expanded again to 4,000, which gives you a fair amount of latitude. But this is a new genre, which is mobile, accessible, cheap, fast, interactive, and it covers more range than any other written genre I can think of. From the reasonably formal, no, I would be obliged if you would come and see me at 4 o'clock this afternoon, to sexting and texting and sexting and other things, which we talked about last week. Now,
Let me jump in, sorry. has texting made our punctuation and grammar worse or better?
It's made it different. I think it's difficult to talk about better or worse because there are different sorts of punctuation for different sorts of writing. Now, remember that we don't have punctuation in speech, except that all the punctuation marks have some kind of way of being pronounced. So if there's a comma, you make a little pause and possibly your voice goes down a bit. And if there's a question mark, your voice goes up. You really want to see me at 5 o'clock? 5 o'clock, 5 o'clock, right? Yes. Question. So this is part of our written and spoken language. The only one we don't pronounce, by the way, is the poor old apostrophe. And that's why the apostrophe is in such dead straits, because a lot of people are saying, oh, it's too hard, give it up. But what's happened, there have been a few interesting things that happened with texting and punctuation. One is that the comma has been less and less used. And to pick up what Grant was saying, there are fewer and fewer commas. It takes up one character, and you want that for other things with content, so you just leave it out. So, all right, and of course the colon and the semicolon. My daughter knows when it's me sending a message because it's got colons in it. Nobody else does. But what the full stop has undergone a really quite sinister change. Oh. And it goes like this. If I say to you, I'm sorry, I've got to go and visit Mum, and I can't meet you at 5 o'clock, no full stop. Among younger people, this is now taken to be the default way of an ordinary statement of fact, and, you know, you take no particular emotion out of it. But if I say, can't see you at 5 o'clock, full stop, this now means you've got up my nose, I'm sick of you, get out of my way, I don't want to communicate with you anymore.
That's a lot in a little dot.
It's a lot in a dot. And, of course, if you belong to my generation and you're using full stops the traditional way, you might give offence to someone who belongs to a younger generation, and they might confuse me by not using it when they send messages to me because I'd expect it. So that's one really important change that's happened. And, of course, if you don't have it explained to you, you won't know. It's almost quite sinister.
What are we going to do, Rolly? The future of intergenerational communication is at stake.
It
do
is.
Do we use full stops or not?
Well, I haven't finished yet. It gets worse. Which is the exclamation mark. Now, in the past, the only place when you found exclamation marks was in comics. You know, when someone hit the baddie on the jaw and you went bang. And there were a bang, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. One of the things that's happened in texts is that even in fairly factual texts, I had one today from someone saying, can we have a look at the proofs of this in the next week or so? We're really interested in them. Exclamation mark. And I thought, why are they that interested? And then I realized that this exclamation mark has actually taken over the job of the full stop. Now, the other interesting thing is, and there's been some good research about this, multiple exclamation marks are mostly used by young women. And, of course, a lot of men have been unkind and said, oh, well, of course, they're just being excitable. But a lot of careful research has shown that that is not the case. And it's simply a mark of being more interested in interaction with people and showing emotion and friendliness.
Yeah. I can understand that. Like, I'm not offended by exclamation marks, although there is a perception that perhaps they're less professional. But then there's also, as you say, that theory that it's feminized punctuation and therefore it's the patriarchy trying to punctuate things.
Ah, yeah, all right. Get gender into it one way or the other. There are two things going on here, I think. Well, maybe three. One is the difference between written language in texting and written language in more formal ways. And there are two different sets of rules, and you really, truly must try and get them separate. Otherwise, you will be, you know, writing strange things in an application for a job. So we've got two sets of rules we need to know and to keep separate. The second one is a gender one. Is it a young female writing or not? And if so, is the young female behaving consciously like a young female or behaving not like a young female because she's writing to me? All right, so there's an age thing and there's a gender thing. So we've got age, gender, and genre, if you like, of careful written versus informal written. And I'm afraid poor old punctuation is trying to span the lot and is ending up in a bit of a mess.
Someone told me today, Rolly Sussex, that thumbs up can now be perceived as rude and sarcastic in a text message.
Yes, I've heard the same thing. And you need also to be careful if you're on a Zoom call, because, of course, there are a number of things that you can do by way of reacting in Zoom. And one of them is putting your hand up saying, I want to say something. But there's other ones with the thumbs up. And if this is now taking on a new meaning, then we are in bad trouble. Emojis, on the whole, by the way, are ways of trying to overcome the lack of emotion in text. And I think that's really interesting. In 2015, the Oxford Dictionary declared that the laughing with tears emoji was actually the word of the year. The word of the year. Now, for Oxford to do this is really, really radical. But I thought it was an interesting comment on the way in which we are exploiting texting and trying to squeeze as much meaning out of it as we can without getting misunderstood, because, as you and I know, emails and text are an absolute minefield for misunderstanding.
It's the modern-day hieroglyphics, I think. Rolly, whack a few emojis in there. I love them.
Go back 5,000 years to the ancient Egyptians, yeah. But this is really interesting to watch, because it's happened very fast.
Yes.
In the last 8-10 years, maybe. It seems to be a moving target, like the thumbs-up thing. And, of course, you can make dreadful mistakes if you don't know what signs mean. President Nixon was coming to Australia for a state visit, and someone had told him about the Churchillian V for victory sign. And, you know, this would go down well with the Australians. So he got out of the plane and made the V for victory sign. Unfortunately, his hand was facing the wrong way.
Oh, dear.
And someone really should have told him that this has a different meaning in Australia.
Rolly, we've got a rush of questions for you on phone.
Lovely.
And on text. Let's see if we can jump in. We've got 6 minutes, but Mary's in the gap.
Rightio.
Hello, Mary. What's your question for Rolly?
Yes, darling. The word DIFFERENT, different. Why are people saying now different to? I was always taught it's different from.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so was I. The idea being that from separates things and to brings them together. So different from, but similar to. Unfortunately, they are so close, you know, they're used in similar sorts of sentences. And the to one has now started to infect different. Very often, by the way, the shorter one will start getting in the way. And so it's pushed its way in and people are saying different too. And they're even saying different than, which is an Americanism and is becoming quite common in speech in people under about 35. Well heard. You've spotted a change in progress. I still say, well, if I'm writing, I very carefully do say different from. If I'm speaking, I don't think I've ever said different to. But if I do, will someone kindly stop me?
That'll be you, Mary.
But again,
you can pick him up.
It's a generation thing.
Darling, showing up.
Lovely, Mary.
Rightio, Rolly.
Well spotted.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much,
Mary in the gap. She's no different from you, Rolly. Did I do that right? Yeah.
You did?
I think
exquisitely.
Mac in Townsville says, hello, Rolly, could you explain how, where, when and why the PH in phone, photo and phrase are pronounced as F? And words that end in GH, such as rough, enough, and tough, are also pronounced as F. So why isn't stuff spelt STOUGH?
Okay. Mark's on a couple of interesting issues here. The first one about the PH words. In Greek, this is about 300, 400 BC, the words were spelt with a letter called pi, P-H-I, and they were pronounced P-H. And when they were borrowed into Latin, that sound didn't exist in Latin, and they started pronouncing it the nearest approximation you've got. Now, p-h, if you use both your lips and start blowing, f, it sounds a bit like an F. And so it became F. And what happened then was that some countries like Germany, say, the name Stefan for Stephen has got an F, but in English it's got a PH or sometimes a V.
Yes.
Which shows that people were confused, and what was a PH in ancient Greek came a F in a lot of other languages, and the word phone, for example, in Greek used to mean sound or voice, which is why we get all of these, you know, phonology and phoneme and things nowadays. A similar sort of story with the old GH, and I'm afraid there's about seven ways of pronouncing that in English. It's an absolute pain in the neck. It used to be a H sound. Now, if you make a K, 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 and then blow hard, K, H, K, H, that's the sound it probably was like. So cough was koch. But that sound gradually fell out of use in English as well. The only time you might hear it is in L-O-C-H, as in Loch Lomond. But then most people who aren't Scots just simply say Loch Lomond. And the H, what was the nearest thing we had? Well, had to be a sound with the air continuing to rush past, F. And so, you know, these things like chuff, C-H-O-U-G-H, laugh, with a G-H. It used to be lach. It became laugh over time. And I'm afraid that the spelling was already locked down. Remember, Caxton opened his printing press in London in 1476, and that tended to fix a lot of the spelling. And sometimes it was downright wrong. For example, the word ghost. There's a perfectly good word, G-A-S-T, gast, in Old English, no H. But it's written with an H in Holland. The printers that came over to work with Caxton were, a lot of them, Dutch, and they spelt it their way, and that's where we get an error which is no longer part of our... Well, it shouldn't be part of our English, but it is.
How spooky, how fascinating.
Very weird.
Ghast. Ghost.
Mark has an instinct for the difficult.
Wonderful. Oh, well, dear. Sussex, do you have a last word for us?
Yes. This is from Charles Schultz, whom I very much like. All you need is love, but a little chocolate now and there doesn't hurt.
I highly agree. Rolly Sussex, as always, it has been a delight. I said that with an exclamation mark.
Because you did, and a rising tone.
That's how I feel every time I hear your voice. Thank you. We will talk again next week.
You've been listening to A Word in Your Ear with Professor Rolly Sussex, a podcast from ABC Radio Brisbane. Every week on the ABC Listen app.